Welcome to Red Cup Rebellion, Podcast Rebellion. I am Juco All American, joined as always by Whiskey Wednesday. I'm a little rusty. It has been a while since we potted. We like to do it when we have a lot of things to talk about. So, yeah, now it seems like a good time. There is a lot to talk about. And we're mostly going to talk about the spring, I guess the spring game or whatever it is, game of games. But more just sort of like the spring in general, and then kind of what we expect to see this Saturday, April 13th, at 3 p.m. Central. So let's kick it off. I mean, before we talk about individual players or what we're excited to look for or anything, I guess we can sort of preview the format. They announced it, the specific format today, which is, and I'm not reading it. I should have had it pulled up, but I think it is, there's a dunk contest at the very beginning, and any player who makes the final of the dunk contest earns a point for his team. The winner of the dunk contest gets 7 points, so essentially a touchdown for their team. And then they have a first quarter of 7-on-7s, and then they have like a tug of war, and then they have another quarter of 7-on-7s, and they have an obstacle course, and they have another quarter of 7-on-7s. And, oh, there's a hot dog eating contest with Joey Chestnut at halftime. Joey Chestnut! How cool is that?
It's pretty funny. I like it. I really love the kind of, I don't know, viral picture or whatever you want to call it of Joey Chestnut that came out a couple, you know, a year or two ago or whatever, where he's like about to enter a competition and he looks like Michael Jordan going into game 7, just like the most intense. So yeah, I love it. I love that. You know, there's this like inner message board poster in me that like really wants to complain about the format just because like, yeah. I want something that resembles football, man. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I understand.
No, I mean, I think that's a very irrational thought to have. Especially, you know, Ole Miss fans are really excited to be able to see this incredible defensive line. And in a 7-on-7, I don't know. It's going to be weird. I guess it depends on what 7 there are. But, you know, that a 7-on-7 is not where Walter Nolan is going to thrive.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a tremendously deep team overall. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we want to see everybody. I feel like we could put together, you know, I feel like sometimes maybe an 11-on-11 game with two full squads doesn't work great if you're not a deep team. Mm-hmm. Which Ole Miss often is not. So in those cases, sure. But now, like, we put together two teams that would beat a lot of mid-majors, you know?
Yeah.
Play a game. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I do recognize that it's dumb if a player gets hurt. And obviously you don't want to do that. But I don't know. It's fun to watch spring football for a quarter or two and then see like people who will never play for another two quarters. There's something fun about that.
Totally.
So Lane Kiffin did mention in a press conference that there would be like fraternity and sorority involvement. And that was not outlined in the thing that I just read. So I don't know if that's like, maybe they're in the tug of war or something. I don't know, but, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I think that we have to watch it for what it is and to be happy with it. You have to watch it for what it is, which is kind of like a fun little exhibition kind of thing. Here's how I would be bummed. I would be bummed if we don't get to like one of Austin Simmons or Walker Howard quickly. And obviously, like, you know, the way that the teams are split, like one of those will have to start. We'll have to play very early, but it would be a little frustrating to me if like Jackson Dart and the, I guess I couldn't say the ones offense because they're going to be drafted and split and everything. But if like the top two quarterbacks and their 7-on-7 teams stay against each other for, you know, three quarters, and then you see whichever of the third of those has not won out in that role. Like, I think this is a great opportunity to see Austin Simmons versus Walker Howard. I want to see those two. I want to see how they throw. We haven't really seen much of them at all, even in like the last spring game and everything, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Soon after Austin Simmons got on campus, there was this like rumble. It's like, oh, he might be the quarterback of the future. But then like Walker Howard just annihilated the spring game last year. And so like my thought was that like, no way, it's Howard all the way. And then you add in, you know, factors like Simmons playing baseball, you know, not fully participating. So like, I don't know. I want to see if it's real. But apparently, I mean, I know enough having watched, you know, highlights of Austin Simmons that his arm talent is out of control. It really is. But like, I don't know. I think Howard just has a lot of mojo as a quarterback. So yeah, that's kind of what I want to see. And I think that's something that we should be able to see some of in a 7-on-7 format.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not to derail this conversation, but, Austin Simmons and playing baseball, maybe cut that out. Like he's good. He's a good pitcher. He, sure. You know, has pitched a ton and is, but like the team sucks. just devote your efforts to football and it'll be okay. Like, you have a chance to, a year from now, be having a legit battle with Walker Howard for who replaces Jackson Dart on a team that might have achieved a lot of things at that point. Maybe don't devote a lot of effort to being a relief pitcher on a bad SEC team.
Yeah, I mean, just the list of athletes who are able to do two sports effectively at the college level has just dwindled to nothing, you know?
Yeah. And for one to be a quarterback, like a position that is so film and having time to learn heavy, as opposed to like a corner or, you know, something like that, running back. A quarterback, that's a tough thing to do. Sorry. I don't want to talk about baseball because I really don't want to talk about baseball. But let's then switch to like practice reports that have come out and things. And I'm sure you've watched a number of press conferences that Lane Kiffin has done and other players have done and things. I think that it's clear that the media is not getting much access at all to spring ball. And I know they've been asked not to report on injuries and things. And I don't know. It just seems more and more like to me that Lane Kiffin is just like, we're not going to do the spring. I don't mean no practices, of course, but like emphasis on the spring, not at all.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It kind of falls in line with his insistence on this like pro mindset thing. He's like, spring football isn't that important because you're putting in the work year round anyway, if you're serious about it. And you know, I respect it and you can't argue with the results too much. And you know, with the increasing reliance on portal players, who already have experience and stuff. I get it. It really, I don't know. It, like I said, I would love to see something that resembles football in April just to tide me over.
But yeah, I also wonder if the second portal period plays a part. Like, is there some value, strategic value, in not letting players see what becomes abundantly clear as to who wins position battles and things like that?
Absolutely. You mentioned that Kiffin, you know, doesn't want reporters to talk about injuries and things like that. He doesn't want them to talk about depth charts. that's something that he, I think, has like personally insisted on, like for giving, you know, media outlets access. He's like, you can watch practices. Don't try to give me a depth chart, because if someone sees that they're fourth string, then they're out of there. But, you know, that might not be our
right
vision for them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, this, I was talking to my dad about this earlier today, actually. This offensive line lost almost nothing and added Jerkon Squat from Southern Miss, who started for over 40 games there. They added the two Washington transfers. They added the UNC left tackle. Like, it's going to be... Surely someone is going to transfer. Or transfer again. I mean, I guess if they've transferred in.
Yeah. Given the four returning starters that we have, the four returners, guys like Eli Acker, Bryson Sanders, Preston Cushman, who have been kind of waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, something's got to give there. I mean, I don't want Lane Kiffin to cut off our media access, but... for saying so, but.
I mean, like, young players, you can easily justify, like, hey, we brought all these guys in who only have 1 year of eligibility. Like, we're trying to make a run this year, and you know, we see some opportunities for you in the future. But like, when you have eight seniors who are used to starting, like,
something has to happen. We have a couple of returning starters who maybe ought not be starters this year. And man, I'm not going to name specific names, but like dudes who just like did not look like SEC starters a lot of the season in 2023. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. They were, you know, the weak point on the team.
Yeah. But who will be like stunningly good backups.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it wouldn't be a disaster if they started. It wouldn't even be bad if they started. It's just probably they don't put us in the best position to like make a run in the playoff.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's actually talk about then who has been interviewed. So who has been sent to press conferences, which I often see as some sort of sign that those players are worth paying attention to. And then also kind of like who has been brought up maybe by Kiffin or whoever else that is sort of standing out to you in some capacity over the course of this spring.
Sure. So I have not been doing a good job of keeping up with the press conferences, but
yeah,
I've been reading, you know, practice reports everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the main things that stuck out to me is two guys in the secondary that I didn't necessarily plan or I didn't necessarily expect would contribute. Brandon Turnage, who I kind of thought would be maybe a safety even. I don't know.
And then a clear backup role, I imagine.
Yeah, here. Yeah, exactly. Apparently is emerging as a potential like major player for you know, for time at cornerback. Again, we haven't read anything about depth charts, so I don't know if he would currently pencil in as like the number two guy or the number five guy or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's up there apparently.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me. And then Jaden Kennedy, the transfer from Tulane, he was very good as a true freshman for them and then had like a serious knee injury, I think, and then transferred to Ole Miss. And his last season was, you know, kind of a scratch. I think he might have played a little bit super late in the season or something, but very undersized safety, but apparently is playing well and will probably get some time. So those are the two biggest surprises to me. And well, actually, since we're on the topic of the secondary, South Alabama transfer Yam Banks, supposed to be kind of a you know, large nickel corner, kind of a guy that can lend some run support and you know, be physical with tight ends and stuff like that. He's been talked about more than Key Lawrence, the safety transfer from Oklahoma, and Lewis Moore, the transfer from Indiana, whose, you know, statistics were insane. Yeah, I've heard a lot more talk about him than either of those two.
Yeah. In order. Yeah, Brandon Turnage, I expected to do nothing when he transferred to Ole Miss. He, if you remember, like, he had one awesome week when he won, like, SEC Freshman of the Week at Tennessee, where he stepped in and started and had, like, 14 tackles in some big game of theirs, and then, like, kind of disappeared for the rest of that year. Then was a journeyman. I think he got hurt at one point. Maybe missed almost a year with a torn, or a whole year with a torn ACL or something. I know he got hurt. I just don't remember if it was an ACL or something, but it was something significant. And then he ended up at Bama, but didn't really do anything there. And I just sort of saw this as like, well, you know, he's coming back home for his final year of eligibility, and it'll be neat to have somebody who's from Oxford and all that. But yeah, no, I mean, so they interviewed him, and Kiffin mentioned him. He was also mentioned in the Jared Ivey podcast that OM Spirit does. Let's see, who was it that mentioned him?
Ivy League.
Yeah, it might have been Pooh Paul, but anyway. Yeah, so, you know, players are recognizing him, which is really encouraging. Yam Banks, I think that, you know, when he was at South Alabama, he had his second to last year there. He was like a coverage freak. He had, I think, 11 or 12 passes defended and 5 or 6 picks. Last year, he was not putting up those stats. It's frustrating to have to mention stats, but the only highlight of Yam Banks, and I'm not going to watch just tons of South Alabama games, the only highlight of Yam Banks, and there are many versions of this, but is a one-handed pick that he made in an end zone that you can find all over YouTube and Instagram and everything, but that's it. So I don't really know anything about his game other than I have heard anecdotally that South Alabama was really sad to lose him, and their fans think that he's like a, you know, potential star kind of player. Jaden Kennedy, I think that until I'm proven wrong, I will assume that it is spring ball fluff, because he played in one game last year.
Yeah, I mean, he was getting over that injury.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal as a freshman, made a bunch of big plays against Oklahoma when they had them on the ropes. I don't know. I mean, I could kind of see it. Just depends on whether they want to rotate a little more freely than they did last year or not, you know, because they had guys like, I don't know, the most common parallel I could draw to Jaden Kennedy is maybe like Teha Young, who last year, you know, transferred to Ole Miss from FIU or FAU, whichever one Kiffin was at, right? I don't know.
FAU. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, was a very, very experienced, productive player for them, but didn't play a ton for Ole Miss. So I could see that, but I don't know. I could also see a situation where, you know, he's got a little more tread left on the tire and he plays a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm also really interested to see Aiden Williams and Caden Lee. I'm definitely not giving up on Aiden Williams after just his freshman year. Especially with the way that Kiffin is really weird about not playing many receivers. But it would be cool to see them show out in some capacity, especially in 7-on-7 ball. Like, you kind of expect to see high flying numbers and everything. Yeah. I tell you, the other person that I guess has been surprising in a bad way to me is to hear that Centurion Perkins essentially hasn't gained weight. It's like, gosh, man, that is the goal. Centurion Perkins' entire summer plan should just be like centered entirely around him gaining weight. And people have talked about like, oh, but the problem is at linebacker, you have to gain good weight. Like, dude, just gain some bad weight. It's okay. Just please just get bigger.
Yeah, I mean, it's physics. Like, I mean, but also how bad can the weight gain be if you right. lift that much? I don't know. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I don't know if you haven't been following practice reports and stuff, Perkins is still kind of playing that stand up defensive end edge. You know, there's 10 different names for it, whatever. But he's not playing like that middle linebacker sideline to sideline position that probably a lot of us envisioned when he was, you know, the number one linebacker coming out of high school.
Also, like if he has to play that edge position at 205, then he just can't play against Georgia. He can't play against teams that are big that can just run right at him. He can't do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he was, I don't know, if you look at the stats last year, he made quite a few tackles. He had like 39 tackles or something like that. And, you know, as not a starter for the most part, but like in big games, like he got erased just, you know, whenever the ball would come his way, he would get erased by an offensive lineman pretty much. And
I'm definitely not trying to call the guy out. I think he has tons of potential. Like there were times that it was just like, oh man, what an awesome play that Sutton Perkins made.
Massively talented. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, gosh, just this one task, please get bigger, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Fried food, peanut butter, man. Just drink peanut butter. I don't know.
That's right. But yeah. Other than that, like I think that, Kedrick Risino, which is how I'm pronouncing his name until I hear it pronounced differently, because that's the way that all of his hometown media pronounces his name. I don't think this is like a format for him, a 7-on-7. Like, I mean, I guess it is because he's an offensive skill player, but like his game is likely to be more tackle breaking, hard yardage kind of guy. And that doesn't really flourish in this environment. But you know, Ulysses Bentley will be interesting to see. Obviously we know to a huge degree what we have there, but like we've never really seen him get a significant workload. I guess that won't really change on Saturday. Daquan Wright is someone that I'm really interested to see, because I don't really have a sense yet whether he is a pretty good receiving tight end, or if he's more in the like, wow, you could kind of think of him as a wide receiver who also plays tight end vein, which is kind of how it's been like pitched. But sometimes guys, tight ends get pitched that way. And then once they have to play against not ACC teams, then it's like, oh no, basically they're kind of like too slow for wide receiver, but also not really big enough to block at tight end. And kind of like, it's a difficult tweener situation, you know?
Yeah. I'm interested to see him as well. I think kind of the competition between him and Hudson Wolfe as to who gets the most tight end snaps behind Caden Prescorn is going to be pretty interesting. I kind of viewed him as a kind of a plus athlete, you know, in the passing game. But you know, he also just might be a more experienced version of, oh shoot, the guy who transferred out, the second string tight end last year.
Michael Trigg?
Nope.
Casey Kelly?
Nope.
Those two also transferred out.
They did. Give me 4 seconds while I pull up my little sheet. Kieran Heath.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Heath showed some flash at times, but like didn't seem like he had a great feel for the game overall. Like he would get penalized and get kind of lost and stuff, but like he would block really aggressively and he was fast enough and he had decent hands. I don't know. So I kind of view Wright as maybe a more experienced version of him, maybe slightly similar skill set or role on the team. I don't know. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, shoot, he might be 1A, 1B with Caden Breescorn if he's, you know, that athletic. We don't know.
No.
I mean, that would be an extreme case. But
yeah. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, he could be the type of player that demands to play a lot. And like potentially a lot of two tight end sets and that sort of thing. Because if he is a matchup problem, then it's kind of interesting to think about what could happen out of a two tight end set with him and Caden Prescorn. You know, like you could have both of them stay in and block, or you could like essentially line up four wide, and you know, then the defense kind of really has to prepare for way too much.
But you know, one of the things I'm most excited about in this upcoming season is seeing if Caden Prescorn can be really healthy and have his full, you know, complement of speed and agility and you know, stuff like that, because we really never saw him at his full health, and probably the best version of him that we saw was in the bowl game when he just absolutely dominated.
Yeah. I mean, he's even before the bowl game in blocking, he would consistently have like huge blocks. But yeah, in the bowl game, it was like, oh, he could also be a crazy receiving threat like he was at Memphis for, you know, his entire career. And then suddenly like, took quite a while at Ole Miss, but then he broke out in that bowl game. Okay, so this brings us to the question that we wanted to spend more time on, although I realize we've taken longer than expected with some of this. But you sent me a text message the other day. We were talking about Pete Golding and how someone was upset that he's paid as much as he is because he's one of the highest paid coordinators in the country. We both think that it's absurd to be upset that he's paid highly because he's been phenomenal as a defensive coordinator. Before we get to the question, do you remember, I'm sure you know that like Alabama fans continue to say like, oh, Pete Golding, great. Like what a terrible defensive coordinator. It's like, what did you see? What happened this year to suggest like, oh, the Georgia game? Okay, great. Well, I'll tell you what happened in the Georgia game. None of our defensive players could keep up in any way with Georgia's team. That has nothing to do with Pete Golding.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So this is the question that you posed to me, and I said I didn't want to answer because I wanted to talk about it on the podcast. Eventually, 30 years from now, or whenever, 1 year from now, when Lane Kiffin leaves, or I guess this could potentially be fired, although like the concept of that in my mind at the moment is like so crazy. But anyway, how would you feel about Pete Golding replacing Lane Kiffin as the head coach at Ole Miss? So I'll go first. My initial reaction was like wholeheartedly, yes, great. He's proven that he is able to recruit really well. And also that he is a great coach. So like, those are the things, right? That's exactly what you want. And I think that Ole Miss could do a ton worse than Pete Golding. My only drawback is that I think there are a very few programs in the country who can sustainably succeed with the defensive head coach. And they have to make great offensive coordinator hires time and again. And then when those coaches are poached away, they have to hire another really great offensive coordinator. Because I don't think that many programs can take the approach of like, our defense is going to be so good that it's not really going to matter if our offense is able to consistently put up points.
Yeah, I agree. You've taken the wind out of my sails a little bit in terms of counter argument, but you know, I'll just elaborate. So, yeah. Okay. I think my position was that, I don't know. So especially if Lane Kiffin were to leave kind of abruptly or at a bad time or something like that, like absolutely you hand Pete Golding the keys.
Of course.
So one of the best and worst things about Lane Kiffin, he's super aloof. All right. Mm-hmm. He is like one of the biggest weirdos in the football world. And I think that his like interpersonal skills are just like not really there.
Who was it? Wasn't there a player like a year or two ago who said like Lane Kiffin's really weird? And I mean that in a good way. Was it Henry Parrish? I think it was Henry Parrish.
I don't know. I hope it was. I hope it was.
And then anyway, and then Kiffin in a press conference was like, yeah, he meant it in a good way. That's cool.
But yeah, Pete Golding fills in all of those gaps where Lane Kiffin's personality can be a liability. Like he's a mm-hmm. much better recruiter. He's, yeah. you know, he fills that like rah-rah kind of role in the locker room and on the sideline and stuff like that. Like he's just an amazing compliment. And I think he has enough credibility and enough contacts in the coaching world where he could find an offensive guy or two to keep the train rolling.
But yeah. Alums love him. So, you know, NIL would continue to be a strong thing. Like, you know, he is very appealing to alumni. He's also like a really Southern guy mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of has that you'd love to get a beer with him kind of vibe, which, again, like doesn't matter for coaching football, but matters for maintaining a Grove Collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like he's very much in the mold of Kirby Smart and Will Muschamp. I mean, one of whom is a wildly successful coach, but I mean, both of whom, you know, were very highly coveted as head coaches yeah. at one time. You know, yeah. I think he's very much in that mold and like very highly regarded as a defensive mind and super super young still for you know for his level. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would rather have Pete Golding than take a flyer on the head coach of Toledo or Northern Illinois or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I would certainly rather have him than like an offensive coordinator who seems interestingly up and coming. And what I mean by that is like, obviously, like if you have an offensive coordinator who is clearly revolutionizing football, then like maybe you go with that person. Sure. But like if it's just like, oh, well, Arizona State's offensive coordinator is, you know, has really turned them around and their quarterback play has really like, no, dude, I'm definitely not going to do that. Or even like, I don't know, Ohio State's offensive coordinator. Like, I know I just said it needs to be an offensive guy, but if it's not Pete Golding, I want a proven head coach. Like, I would not be happy with a coordinator, really any other coordinator than him.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So, you know, basically just, I don't know, our thesis here is that you and I talk all the time about how he has been maybe the centerpiece of turning around the program. I mean, Kiffin has done incredible things to the program. He raises the floor of the program, but I think Golding is the one who's raising the ceiling right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, none of this happens without Kiffin. Sure. But yeah, and I mean, Kiffin's greatest asset, well, he has two really big things that Lane Kiffin brings. Like all the Twitter funness and everything is interesting, and all the brand is cool. And I know that it's like fun to cheer for Ole Miss, and that's great. But in terms of like making the team and program better, he's brilliant offensively, and he continues to make incredible hire after incredible hire. Like whenever we lose a guy, I'm like, well, whatever, we'll figure out who the next guy is going to be, and then they announce it and it's like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, there we go. Like we have three former defensive coordinators on the staff now. All right. I guess
that's
kind of cool.
Like If the Pete Golding thing had never happened and we just brought in Brian Brown as our defensive coordinator, I would have been like, oh, hell yes. Like,
Exactly.
and now he's just on staff anyway. Like,
Exactly. And we have like an NFL head coach that's an analyst on the team. I don't know. I think the world of Pete Golding. I think that he's really great. I don't think that we'll even have that opportunity. My expectation is that Golding won't be around for much longer, maybe a year or two, and then he'll be a head coach somewhere.
I mean, I think that's one of the more logical explanations for why Brian Brown came in is maybe he wants to slide in as an SEC coordinator and saw that as an opportunity. So I don't know. We'll see.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. And yeah, we'll come back at some point. But yeah, nice talking to everybody.